Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Derek.
And I'm Ray.
I'm Alex Reed.
And welcome back to another episode of... No Sleepless. Hello guys, shake it off Alex, shake it off, yep, level up,
all right,
ready. Hi guys, welcome back to another episode of Most Lily. You have your girl Raifa in the building.
And your boy.
Alex Reeds.
Elijah Michelson.
Oh yes, I'm so happy that now you're watching the originals and you get to understand why I love Elijah Michelson. I've
one
loved
thing
him
you
since.
Need to know, brother.
And then the way he like takes his coat and, you know, like closes it, like he's buttons like, up his jacket.
He's hilarious.
He is the most.
I love Elijah. I'm on season 3 and I think that.
Of the originals?
Yeah, of the originals.
Wasn't the end of season 1 amazing? When Rebecca came through, you were like, wait, who's going to keep faith? Hope.
Yeah, this is it. Who can keep faith? I think that season 2 stressed me out. Like fully,
what happens in stress
fully
season 2 again?
Stress me out. So this whole back and forth between Esther and then Dahlia came, and this bad bitch witch came, and then Freya was like came out of the woodwork.
Oh yeah,
again.
Freya because
and I was just like, nah, this is all too much.
Yeah,
season two
was scary.
Scary. It was just it was actually scary.
Yeah,
too much witch stuff.
Scary,
there was one night I woke up in the middle of the night and I thought like the spirits had come to collect me or something dead. And I was like, nah, we can't be doing
the
this.
Witches of the fourth quarter or something.
Yeah, so they were just in the fourth quarter of the coven.
Yeah.
But I was like, nah, okay, I'm getting a bit too consumed in it.
Yeah.
So then I watched one episode of season 3, then I took a break for like 2 hours. And then I came back to it because I was like,
I need
to know what's going on with Klaus. But
Klaus Michelson.
Yeah, I think the Michelsons are just...
Always and forever, baby.
Always and forever. It's stress, man.
Right?
Like, sometimes I look at it and I'm thinking to myself, you guys are 1,000 years old, but you have not learned...
Nothing.
Nothing at all.
Like, going through this whole world, you should surely understand how things work, how revolutions rise and fall, and people rise and fall.
But, yeah, the one thing I like, though, is that Elijah and Niklaus always... like fight it out and then they're just like alright,
okay, cool,
like
my favourite character
clarity guys
got, it's my favourite of the Michelson siblings is definitely Rebecca
is just like as even though she's stubborn and she's very like but she's a good person
like, and her heart is she's proud and stuff but she's a big softy.
But she's really cool. I like her.
So that's the originals, guys. That's what Alex is watching.
Yeah.
This just reminds me of The Read. You know how they always start out with Golden Girls? I actually didn't know what that was.
Oh.
I was like, well, who's Sophia? What are they talking about? I don't understand. And then Alex told me, I actually haven't Googled it. I thought they were talking about a black sitcom.
No.
Apparently it's not.
No, it's not. But anyway, so...
how's your week been, Alex?
My week's been pretty good.
Yeah?
Just been a lot of reading. A lot of reading. It's been very, very crazy.
Yeah.
And that's really been it. I'm just trying to like stay cool in this festering heat wave. Like I'm not complaining about the heat.
Because I'm Islamic in this heat is so hard.
Oh man. I just think that Yeah, my week's been good. Yeah. Just been trying to be productive, done a lot of writing,
oh,
a lot of planning, a lot of plotting.
Oh, scheming.
Yeah, so everything should fall together, hopefully, yeah.
Are you comebacking? Oh my God. Are you coming back on Twitter anytime soon? Or have you just decided to log off completely?
To be confirmed.
TBC.
I'm not really.
No, you know what? Sometimes you need to log off. And even I've been like, haven't been on it for a while, like in terms of I'm taking sporadic long pauses. So.
But hit me up on Instagram. I'm living my best life.
Oh my God. Alex is living his very best life on Instagram. He's really enjoying
life.
It's
the same handle, AlexReed__. But the thing is, right, yeah, I mean, I'm still very vexed at my barber. My friend told me to go and do DIY now because I should just go and cut my own hair. But my barber left the country for 3 weeks and didn't tell me.
Yeah.
And I've been stressed.
I'm so sorry for your loss.
Yeah, men are trash. Right? Well. How was your week?
My week. So, you know, I was just working and then I went to Nottingham to interview the amazing Tommy Adeyemi.
She's amazing, right?
Literally incredible young woman. She was so bubbly and amazing and happy. And I got to sit and talk to her within an audience of 100 or so, just a bit over. And we had a conversation about her book, what it means, why it's gotten such praise, because it's a book that, I guess it's almost healing black children, in my view, you know, putting together the West African mythology, religious mythology, combining that with things from the Black Lives Matter movement.
Don't say too much now.
Right? But at the same time, it's just like, yeah, like it's just, yeah. It was amazing. And so that happened and I was super excited. I took a board showing like me and I put it in my hotel room.
And you left it.
I left it. I was so gutted.
Oh man.
But it's fine. I think, you know, the memory will live on.
Shout out to Waterstones.
Yeah, her second book is out in March next year.
Woo! Was it Children of Blood and Vengeance or something? Or
no,
Virtue and Vengeance?
Virtue and
Vengeance.
Yeah.
Yeah, Children of Virtue and Vengeance.
Is it Vengeance or Virtue?
I can't remember. But it sounds such a sick title, either way you put
right?
it, to be
so
honest.
So that's coming out, guys. Literally super excited. Cool. Can't wait to see what she has. I was trying to tell her, I was like, this is what I think will happen. And she wasn't giving anything away.
No, she can't. She literally can't. I think she's even bound legally. Like she can't.
Yeah, that. She can't say anything. But shout out to you. I'm really looking forward to the movie when it comes out as well. So,
Shout outs to... Yes, guys, we're going to be at the Cheltenham Literary Festival.
The first podcast in residence
at the festival this year. Shout out to Clarissa, our manager, and shout out to the Times and everybody who kind of helped make this possible.
Clarissa was like, came in with the moves. She was like, boom, boom, boom.
She's like, this could happen. And we were just like, really? And she's like, yeah, it could happen. And then it did. So it was just very much like...
Like, she's been doing amazing. Like, we're very grateful to have her on our team.
Yeah.
So thank you so much, Clarissa, for making that happen. You're a doll.
But we're looking forward to it, man. Like, so Literary Festival should be good.
Yeah, it's going to be amazing. I wonder if it's going to be like... That's just the logistics. I'm like, is it going to be for the whole week? Okay, I need to get holiday leave.
go figure that out.
Yeah.
So, what are you reading this week?
I'm still reading. I started The Reactive by Masande Nshanga. It's a very slow beginning, actually, just to give it an honest review. It's a bit of a slow beginning. It's kind of picking up a little, but I'm still not fully... in the book, if I'm honest with you. I don't know whether it's because it's just like me and I'm not in it, or it's the book, but the narrative is interesting. It's currently telling the story of a man who has HIV and how he's battling that with a past, I suppose, and familial bonds and ties and histories. So it's a tiny book, but I'm having a little bit of trouble getting really into it. I'll keep you guys updated on how it is going forward. And I've also picked up the book that you gave me, Alex, that is in my house.
What did I give you?
How to Win Friends and...
Did I give you that book?
Yeah, I still have it.
Nah, I need that back though.
I know, I saw it. It's a property of Alex.
Did I give it? I think I lent it to you. How are you enjoying it?
I started it. It's really good. Like, I was a bit surprised. I've realized I haven't... There was a particular point in time when I stopped learning because I was like, oh, I know everything. I know. And I stopped learning. And I'm kind of... And my brain, like, it carried... My brain was okay up to a particular point, but now I feel like there's this block. And I think that block is because I haven't been learning. So now I'm actively trying to, like, read things that... And not be snobby, like, oh, I know it all. More so, like, I know some things, but there's still so much more to learn. So I'm trying to really get into a bit of non-fic just so it can, you know, enrich my soul and my brain.
It's always good. It's always good. It's a good book. I read it in second year uni.
What are you reading?
I'm reading X and Y by Tom Whipple. So it's called X and Y, The Rules of Attraction and Why Gender Still Matters. So it's an interesting book. It's about kind of debunking the myths about, like, gender and sexuality and what and kind of like several psychological tests, and he's basically just exploring it to see if there is a if any of these myths can be debunked and all these different things. So the first chapter, he kind of knocks on the head the predatory male and what that looks like, because there's a psychological test, right, that was going on in Denmark where people, is it Denmark or Norway? One of those countries. And they would have students that go outside and ask people. So women would go to men and be like, hey, do you want to have sex with me tonight? And the reaction from men would either typically be, yes, okay, let's go, or no, regretfully, because I'm
with someone.
And on the very rare occasion, it was, oh, my wife or girlfriend's coming in tomorrow, so we can do all these kind of things. So basically, it was kind of seeing what the reactions are to, like, to sex and the understanding of it. And on the other way around, more women said no than men would say yes.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like figuring out what's nature, what's nurture, and all of that stuff. And the second chapter is Aphrodite, woman and suppressed sexuality, and why that, and he's kind of like unraveling why that's a myth and why society kind of like inhibits women from having agency over their own sexual liberation and their own freedoms and the like. And it's a really good exploration. Like, Tom Whipple's I think he's a journalist, and he just basically just came to scatter everybody's kind of perceptions on gender and sexuality.
I actually just even had a question on the wording of the cover, because X, obviously X chromosome women, but Y and Y, but the Y isn't...
The question why, not
why. So I was a bit like, I didn't take too kindly to that, actually.
Why not?
Because women and Y, I always just looked at, like...
But X is the women's chromosome, right?
Yeah.
And Y is the men's.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's more so like, well, obviously, like, a man has an X chromosome, but it's XY.
Yeah.
And a woman just has XX, so that's why, you know. But it's just, I didn't take well to it, because it's like, the first thing that I thought of was when you posted this on your Instagram was, why is the Y the questioning why? Why isn't X questioning anything? It was almost like... But then again, this was from a man's perspective. So I was kind of like, is it saying that why I'm a man, therefore I'm the one writing and questioning gender? And it just, I don't know, there's something about that cover that I was
Know. I didn't, obviously I didn't look into that like
that. Yeah, I was a bit like, oh, why it could have just been X and Y. It didn't have to be X and mark Y.
Yeah, I just think it's probably the bigger question around it all. Because it's like, we've had these big things, yes, genetically and biologically, XX, XY, that's scientific fact, that's there.
Yeah.
But then it's like, all of these gender battles and sexuality battles and all these different things, it's the question why, like, why are we battling about it? Why are we fighting about it? Yeah. If it's intrinsic, like, you know, within each person, there's an X chromosome, there's a Y chromosome, there's more than some, there's less than some for others. And... it is what it is. Do you see what I mean? But I guess it's just a pun on words. I think that's what made it sell. But it's interesting. There was a study in it, and it was like, on the predatory male chapter, that's the first one, it was like there was this policy in a supermarket where all the employees had to make direct eye contact with their customers and smile, right, and be pleasant all the time. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the women advocated against that, because what it did was it led the men on that they were speaking to, because men now would look at them and be like, is this a kind of,
yeah,
you know, but yeah. They were just instructed to smile and never look away and do all these different things and be friendly. I think the idea is to be friendly, but at the same time,
man will look when at you, that as,
yeah, so they had women that were being approached after, or same men coming in every day, mm-hmm, or and then when they're being rebutted or being refused these kind of advances,
yeah,
it's like aggression then comes, or it's confusion on the man's part. Yeah, it's like, are you giving me mixed signals? What's happening?
Yeah, but isn't that just appalling? Though?
It was a really like strange thing just to read, because I was like, that is really weird, because you get certain signals body language wise, and then when it's just like, oh well, then
I thought you were telling me this.
That's not then. Obviously, the wider public don't know it's a store policy, really. They just they just think, oh, each employee is going to be friendly, yeah, and such. But then it's like the safety of the women as well, yeah, because people will be followed.
Absolutely.
They'll be waited on, like, you know what I mean? Like, so it's looking at these things. People have all these conceptions about gender and all these, yeah, different things, but no one's actually,
I mean,
like,
I think body language is very important and stuff, but at the same time, what gets me is, like, for example, when a woman is smiling to a man and he thinks that it's, you know, the woman is sending him some sort of signal. Mm-hmm. I guess I can understand that, because sometimes if a guy is like overly friendly with me, I'm like, oh, like, is he feeling the kid? Do you know what I mean? But at the same time, I think body language is one thing. As soon as you have verbal confirmation or you see someone being very uncomfortable with your advances,
yeah,
that is literally the place where you're like, okay, cool,
yeah,
there shouldn't be a questioning of, but you were doing this. Absolutely not. Like, how, yeah, you read body language, their intentions, they are very different. Bro, you don't, yeah, know what you're seeing. Do you know what I mean?
You know, people just aren't fluent in these things. Exactly. They'll be like, oh my god,
but you looked at me for like 5 seconds longer than usual.
Yeah,
babes, I might just be short-sighted and I couldn't see you. So, do you know what I mean? And it's so true. Like, if I don't have my sunglasses, like my glasses on,
it's peak.
I'll be staring. I'll be like, what's, I'll be squinting my eyes, and you're probably thinking I'm pulling a face. No, I just can't see you. You know? So
yeah, but it's true, and it's just like, it's a really interesting book, guys. I would say go out and
yeah. So it's X and Y by Tom Whipple.
X and Y by Tom Whipple.
Yeah.
But yeah. So who's lit this week?
Who's lit this week? Well, actually, you sent this woman to me. Yeah, you sent this woman to me.
I sent
so
her.
It is Shahira Yusuf, who is a 20-year-old black Muslim woman who hails from East London. Thank you very much. And
she brightens it up, doesn't she?
Okay, whatever. And in 2017, she posted up a series of like pictures that went viral of her looking like absolutely stunning. And the caption read, "I ain't no Kendall Jenner, but I'm a black Muslim girl from East London, and that's about to finesse the modeling industry."
Wow.
Can you imagine?
The confidence, I love it.
Right? And yeah, like she's just done absolutely amazing things. And she says that she calls herself, you know, a black Muslim. She's a champion of black Muslim excellence. And she's recently been on the cover of Grazia UK, and she's spoken to The Voice about her recent photo shoots and stuff, and she signed on to the modeling agency Storm Models, which has signed which discovered Kate Moss.
It's a really good
and
agency,
the likes, yeah, and she's literally just doing incredible things. She's such a beautiful young woman. And it's wonderful to see black Muslim women being given a platform, because I even saw someone did a channel, I think it was like Channel 4, saying, oh, do Asian Muslims really like oppress or, you know, herald themselves as the peak of Islam against like black Muslims? And I'm like, is that even a question? Like, anti-blackness within the Muslim community is rife. So many times I've had friends who can't marry their Asian boyfriends because their name is not like Priyanka. Do you know what I mean? So, Priyanka
or,
is
like
an Asian.
Or Patel,
yeah. Yeah, like, do you know what I mean? And so, even though Islam will teach you to you know, see everyone as your brother, it's, yeah, I'll see you as my brother so long as you don't enter into my family.
I think it's like it doesn't beat the base cultural
exactly
acceptance.
Exactly.
Kind of societal
and so,
acceptance.
Yeah, it's wonderful to see someone who, like, I always feel like Black Muslim women have a particular point whereby their oppression is overlapped by three different things. They're Black, they're Muslim, they're women. And it's like, rah, what more? What more could you be that could make you so low in the sort of the hierarchy of society? And so for her to have this platform and to be a model, because a lot of the times Muslim women are told they can't flaunt themselves in a certain way, they can't be seen in public, and they can't show the hell off, you know. And I'm always like, sis, go out and do you.
Yeah.
Look beautiful. And this young woman is doing bits, so shout out to you.
Yeah.
Amazing. And we'll tag like her socials when we post this episode. So yeah, Shahira, go on.
All right. So last week's episode was, you guys really engaged with this episode. It was crazy.
Oh yeah, the Harry Potter episode.
The Harry Potter episode.
Yeah.
I want to say thank you so much for you guys for all your comments and all your messages about it. There were several messages about like discussing why Hermione wasn't uppity and how she
was uppity,
she wasn't uppity. I feel like she just had to prove herself and various different things. You know, like it was really.
There was a
good
massive discussion over like houses and stuff, and I think on the poll Ravenclaw won.
Of course, Ravenclaw won. I don't see why it wouldn't win. It just it would have to win.
Well, anyways, so what is it? There's a guy on Twitter who I actually saw the tweet this morning about how technically Gryffindor is the you know the weakest link of Hogwarts because everyone else was amazing, and then he said that. Oh my god, no, I have to find this tweet. Like, it's actually amazing. I literally died.
Nah, it's true. Like, it's actually true. And when you think about it, it's actually quite interesting to see how much this book touched a lot of people.
Yeah, like,
do you see
everyone.
What I mean? Everybody kind of felt like they had a place.
Yeah.
And that kind of helps with the next book that we're going to talk about today.
Let me read the tweet.
Oh, God.
If we're keeping it a buck, everyone knows Gryffindor is the most useless house. Slytherins are ambitious and successful. Ravenclaws are intelligent. Hufflepuffs are kind and make delicious chocolate brownies. Gryffindors are what? Reckless, dauntless, dauntless rejects with ADHD. Okay, what, ADHD is a recognised mental illness, I mean, so we are not laughing about that.
That's rude.
But
the rest.
Dauntless rejects. It's true.
Dauntless rejects, because the thing is, like, they were always the most self-righteous group that were just constantly.
No, but they were brave. They were brave.
They were brave, but they're brave, but they're brave to a fault. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah,
oh,
and sometimes you
I'm 11. I'm going
to
go and run and challenge a three-headed ferocious dog.
Yeah.
And we're all gonna save the school.
Leave Fluffy alone.
Mind your business. I would have literally, you would have seen me see that dog, I would turn right back to my house.
I would have been like, well.
Said my riddle, solved the riddle, gone to bed.
I would have been like the Kenyan woman who's like, well, good question.
Okay.
See ya.
Nah, I don't think anybody has time. Who has time to be doing all
See,
this?
See, Fluffy, I'd have been like, well, bye.
I'd have been like, I don't know what you're talking about the next day. I'd have been like, oh yeah, do you remember, have we seen the three-headed, what three-headed dog?
What
I saw nothing.
I'm sorry. Voldemort, who? I don't know who that one is.
He who must not be named, okay?
We don't say that person's name. No. I'd have gone back in my nice Slytherin dorms.
Yep.
You know, got my grades, finessed a few people.
Mind my business.
Mind my business.
Whether they got the stone or not, this is not my personal issue. I need to actually finish my year. And this is kind of what Hermione...
I need to take my owls.
This is what Hermione was saying. She's
she goes, you need to
get your priorities.
Get your priorities in order, yeah. You know? Like, or worse, expelled.
But yeah, so that was Harry Potter last week. So thank you guys for messaging. We love messages like that. We love all the emails.
We got a message from someone all the way in Australia.
Oh, is it?
Yes, we did.
Oh, man.
I'll find it and read it out sometime during this episode.
Okay.
But I was like, yo, what? What?
Okay, so this week then, from one fantastical book to another.
To another.
Fantastical book.
This is the fantastic with the melanin.
Yeah, with the melanin though. Very much. We're speaking about Children of Blood and Bone on this episode.
The first of the Orisha trilogy by Tommy Adeyemi, Gang Gang.
Gang Gang. So the story is centered around Zaylee, who is on a mission to bring back magic to Orisha, which is Nigeria, more or less. And thus, in an alternative Nigeria world, and thus goes against the monarchy of King Saren to bring it back.
Yeah.
And first thoughts on the book. It's a young adult fiction book.
Yeah.
And it's got loads of amazing the characters are black. There's no ifs or buts about it. I don't think there's a white character to be seen at all
they're not even mentioned. This is just the world of Orisha.
Yeah.
And obviously they're not different races, but there are different tribes and clans.
Yeah.
Essentially there are two types of subcultures. You have the Magi, who are the magical folk. And then you have what are the other ones called?
The Kossidans.
The Kossidans, yeah.
Kossidans are the regular people.
Yeah, just like, regular.
Literally just getting on with life and minding the business.
And then you have the Magi. Merchant,
and then you've got
the... Who are touched by magic.
So the Magi and the diviners or diviners?
Diviners are diviners are the ones that are Magi but touched by magic.
Right, okay.
So, one of the diviners, who's the main person in this, main protagonist, Zaylee. Is Zaylee, who has a brother of hers called Zane, who is a Magi, but he isn't a diviner.
He's not Magi. He's Kossidan.
Is he? No.
Yeah, he's Kossidan. Just because.
I forgot. I think
it's all right. Kossidan? So what happens is Zaylee's mother is a Magi.
Is a Magi. Magi. Yeah.
And she's and there are several clans. And the clan that she's from is the. I want to look at the actual name, the Iku clan, which is the Reapers, and they have command of the living and the dead.
Okay, let's explain this because sometimes
it's confusing.
I don't think we have it. So basically, there's a scene in this book whereby they reach a temple, and they kind of you are told how magic came about.
Right.
Now there is this magical being. I think they call her mother.
The Sky Mother.
Sky Mother.
It's
a god.
It's Nigerian folklore god.
Mythology. Religious mythology.
Before imperialism.
Before all that. It's not even before or after. It just didn't happen in that world.
Yeah.
So Sky Mother, something happens. And Sky Mother, basically, some of her powers goes down to these humans. And you have something happens. I forgot
I'm going to say this.
Yeah.
So the Sky Mother is the god of all things, the universe, right? She has several children who are the representations of various parts of her, and they become the lead. They're the leaders of each clan, and then they produce their magic for the followers.
Yeah.
So for example, the burners.
That's
are from the fire. So that's who
raised Fire of the Heart.
Fire of the Heart. So basically it's Sky in the Mother's in the heart. Legend, in the book, it's taken from the Sky Mother's heart. I think his name is Shango, takes the fire from her heart and brings it down to share it with the followers
Children,
of his followers. So and then that's when it becomes, it starts to mix in with the Children of Blood and Bone. They create their children as their followers. Yeah.
Born and then you don't know what you are until obviously your magic is ignited.
All the diviners are born with silver hair.
Mm-hmm.
And once their magic activates, it dictates which clan that they come in.
Yeah.
Typically, you're the clan of your parent, but it can change in whichever way.
Zaylee's mother was also a reaper.
Yeah, she was the lead. She was the leader of the reapers.
Of the Iku clan.
So there are several clans. There's the Reaper clan. So the Iku clan, which is reapers. There's the Emi clan, which is the connectors.
The connectors.
Which are the guides of spirits and dreams. The Omi clan, which are tiders. So they are
They control water.
They control water.
Yeah.
The Ina clan, which is the burners. So they control fire.
They control
putting
fire
it out.
And their deity is Sango.
The Afefe clan, which is the winders. So they control wind.
They control air, yeah.
The Ayi clan, which is grounders and welders. So they
control iron and the earth.
There we go. The Imole clan, which is lighters, so they control light and dark,
mm-hmm.
bringing it and taking it away. The Iwosan clan are the healers and the cancers.
Yeah. So they can both give disease and take it away. Which is, I think, is so cool.
And the Ariran clan are the seers.
They can see into the future
and past.
Yeah. And we have a seer who you meet, especially right at the beginning of the story. Which is
and you've got the Iranko clan, which are the tamers, and they're the ones that guide and can manipulate the animals of the earth. So the story, I think it's an amazing story, just based up, like, if you just take it to its bare bones of just a young woman who wants, he's on a quest to get something back that's very dear to her.
Yeah.
And that gives her meaning, you know? Like, so you've got, you know, in all of these young adult fiction books, there's always the protagonist has to obviously have something that they're searching for and wanting to get and bring back. It's usually something that's taken from them.
Yeah.
But it was doubly like important, this book, just because it's a lead black character, a dark skinned character at that, because the diviners are dark skinned with silver hair. So they automatically stand out. And you know, finding and growing up knowing what she is and knowing that of what she comes from and being taken away and being that taken away from her.
Yeah.
It was quite interesting to see that kind of emotional pull that you get as a reader.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's their magic taken away. That's their language taken away. And then
the history
taken away.
Because basically, obviously, so King Saran, who is the monarchy of Orisha, his family was basically burned by a burner.
Yeah.
And
he
wanted vengeance. And so he basically went and killed all of the Magi.
Yeah. He killed a lot of, he killed all the Magi, all the leaders. Yeah.
Yeah, and stuff. And left the children.
Left the children and enslaved them.
Yeah. And so he stripped away magic, essentially, and by destroying some artifacts. And so the book is Zaylee with her brother
Zane
and the princess of Orisha, Amari, who has escaped her home because her father had killed one Magi who was very close to her,
a diviner,
that's it,
yeah.
And so she ran away from home, but then a magical artifact was found that gave this diviner some magical power, and it completely scared King Saran.
So he killed her.
And he killed her, and this was Amari's closest friend, closest companion. So she escapes the castle, finds Zaylee in a market, and tells her to protect her and run away. And the seer who is training Zaylee tells her that, you know, she's been essentially chosen by the gods to find three magical artifacts and go to a temple, and on the night of the solstice, and on this night, if these three artifacts are all together,
the magic
will get back to the land, essentially. Yeah. And
don't want to give too much away, but
so that's the quest.
Yeah, that's the quest.
That is the plot, essentially, of the
novel. So there's this magical scroll that comes in, and as any diviner touches it, magic is activated for a certain amount of period. Yeah. Like, not the full power, but something's activated
in there. And it just scares people, difference.
Yeah,
because they've
been used to something for so long.
Yeah.
You know?
I think what's very important is this. Obviously, Tommy said that this was essentially a kind of allegory for black pain, black struggle, and the children in my head, I'm thinking about the children of people who have suffered under any form of oppression, but most specifically African American oppression, whether it's police brutality. And I think she portrays this so vividly when she talks about the moment, you know, Zaylee's mother got taken by the king's guards and tortured and hanged and stuff. And she wasn't she just dangling on a tree? And it was just so powerful. And this pain literally surrounded Zaylee in the whole book, all the time. Her mother was at the back of her mind.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking about all of these women that have suffered under police brutality, like Sandra Bland and And I'm just like, their loved ones, their deaths must haunt them.
Yeah, it's
at
like
every opportunity.
Yeah, definitely. Like black pain in general, and it's the you've got the system that's around to protect, quote unquote, to protect the people that are in the land of the people. And we see throughout the book the initial theme of the diviners are the lower class people. They've been pushed. They live in the ghettos. They live in the slums.
Yeah.
Or it probably people keep talking about. Is it Ojulegba? Ojulegba.
Now my story.
And people keep saying, you know, like my friend's mum was like, you know, Ojulegba is this wretched like slum in Lagos, and it makes me feel like that's probably, I don't know if I've never been there. I don't know anybody from there.
Yeah, it reminds me of like maybe like even the projects.
Yeah, in the projects
the
or something. That's, and that's where they kind of pushed the diviners, and like with no money, they're the ones that are scrapping, they're the ones that are begging, because you take somebody's power from them and they literally
become
powerless, but they're treated as worthless, so therefore they literally have nothing to do. So they got these young children born with silver hair
and
what was one of the stories in there about Mama Agba? So Zaylee was training with Mama Agba about learning how to fight and do all these things, and then we rediscover like what Mama Agba is. But you know, Mama Agba was like, you know, when you're born a diviner, it's like you're a blessing. You're meant to be a blessing, but then it became a curse in that when these kids were born to a silver hair, their fate was already destined to them.
And it's true, and, like your, you know, a dark skinned child comes out into this world, and in the moment you realize this is a beautiful child, which is a blessing, but then by the mere fact of them, the melanin that they have on their skin, the concentration of melanin that they have on their skin, there are certain things that the world has already inscribed into this child's future.
Yeah,
you know, that at a certain age your parents have to sit you down and give you the talk as to how to behave when a police officer is there. Yeah. This is how you do your hair for work
if they're lucky. To get to have a conversation.
Exactly. This is how you wear your hair to work because you don't want to seem like you're unprofessional. This is how much money you're going to earn when you start this job, not because you don't have talent, but because if you even start this job. If there are even opportunities for you to start this job. Yeah, school must be, you must work twice or three times as hard to get to the same place as the Kosedan, as your white counterparts, because of your skin colour, because of the fact that you are in a social setting that isn't, I guess,
there
fulfilling.
To protect
you
to succeed in. And you know, what's really interesting though is that the question of colorism within the book as well. It's like the nobles were these light skinned, very fair skinned people. They would bleach, they would do all these different things, make them look lighter so that they would differentiate themselves from the,
I mean, considering that there was no white people in this, where did the idea of lighter being more,
I don't know,
elite come from? They're magic and therefore they're darker.
So it's like, you know, I think that's always been a case, even in like olden, in like Tudor times, right? Queen Elizabeth I, she would, if you were richer, you'd be paler because you're inside a lot of the time. You don't need to be outside.
Yeah.
You know, you're surrounded by things that can protect you from outside world.
Yeah.
And this kind of was a remnant of that. Like if you're dark, if you're black, and you're dark skinned, you're outside all the time. There's a reason why you're dark, because you're exposed to the world. And a lot of the diviners are of nature. Like you've got the healers, you've got the tamers, you've got all these people. That's all to do with nature, and you're outside all the time, so they're darker. And it was really interesting to see that kind of comparison made, because when I saw that, I felt really uncomfortable.
Yeah,
because I was like, oh my god, like it would have happened regardless of whether there was an influence outside. Well, not necessarily would have happened regardless, but who's to say that it would have happened? It would not have happened had there not been you've got this community, and it's just, we're inside, so we're going to be lighter. And that just dictates that we are noble, because there's no reason for us to be outside.
Yeah.
You see? Do you want to break down the characters? and have
sure.
a
sure. Okay, so
we have Zaylee, and Zaylee.
Zaylee annoys me. She's so annoying. I mean, obviously she's gone for a lot. Like, she's seen her mother ripped and taken away from her, and so she's very vulnerable, and she has a bit of an imposter syndrome, I think.
Yeah.
Because she's always like, "Why me? I'm always doing things wrong. I'm always hurting my father." So her father's a fisherman.
Oh, Baba. And,
oh man. Ooh. Emotional.
Yeah.
So she's been taken care of by her older brother Zane and her father, and she's a bit of a troublemaker. She's a vibrant young girl, you know, and she's causing trouble, but in my eyes she's living, she's just being a girl. And her brother is an athlete, but then at the same time he's always trying to balance that with looking after his family.
He promised his mom before she died. He was like, to look after Zaylee no matter what.
Yeah.
And that's what he's done. Like, he's put himself
and they
second.
Like, they go for a lot. Like, like Zane has put himself second. He's always there are moments when Zaylee does things that
I'm
Zane's
like,
don't do it. Please don't do it. Don't, because you're gonna really annoy me.
When one of us goes in and we all go through it. Man, it's peak.
It's peak. And there was a time when Zaylee did something and then Zane was like, yo, like, you'll lose me as a brother, like, I will not be there. But obviously he made a promise to his
always
mother,
and forever.
Always and forever, like, he always come back, and that bond is beautiful because you know Zane is going to be there. Like,
I felt that kind of like that want for Zaylee, like, he wanted her to get
good.
The things that she needed, like, she, like, whether it would be the magic, whether it would be love, whether it would be all of these different things.
So,
and,
there is also my favorite character, who is Inan.
I love Inan
so much. So basically, Inan is the son of King Saren and the future king of Orisha. And he always wants to prove himself to his father.
Yeah, as most black sons tend to
and
want to do.
Something happens, and I think it's because he was in close proximity to the magical artifact.
I think his mum was wayward.
Oh, his mum was hella wayward. Of course, that's what I told her that, you know, when I saw Tommy, I said, basically,
his
had an affair
wayward.
And got with the Magi, and that's how Inan came about.
Yes.
So anyways, Inan is
a diviner,
and basically through something happens during the quest to find Zaylee, because he's running after Zaylee and trying to stop her from getting these artifacts and bringing back magic.
He was sent by his father to do it.
Yeah, to like prove himself, you know, as a future king.
Yeah.
And he gets this strip of white hair.
But along the way.
Yeah.
And he's like,
oh. And then something starts changing. He starts understanding people's emotions. When he meets someone, he'll start understanding their past.
Start hearing their thoughts.
He'll literally feel them, and he starts seeing Zaylee, even though she's nowhere near, starts seeing her, starts understanding her thought process. And when he falls asleep, or sometimes he can induce what is called a dreamscape, and within that he pulls your consciousness and his together in an alternate sort of place, whereby he can communicate with people and he can pull you into a specific stratosphere. And it's wonderful, this
he became a connect he's a connector.
So basically he's a connector, and I love connectors. Oh, that's why
I'm
I love
connector.
You. You're a connector.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're very empathetic people. They really like they really feel your pain. And I think one thing about what I love about Inan is his conflict with his inner conflict, because at the same time, he understands that what his father has done is wrong. And he understands Zaylee's pain more than anyone else, because he literally can feel her pain. But at the same time, he can't help but wonder that magic, if it's allowed to just come back, will ruin things.
Mm.
What I loved about Tommy's explanation with Inan is that it's true. Because there is no power, there is no social structure, there is no governance of people who are diviners, they get their powers back. You have...
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Burners who will just rain havoc. Yeah. You have, but we look. But yeah. You don't know though. Everyone has their own intentions. Yeah, so the way that Inan's in a struggle, I think, is very balanced and it's very accurate.
Yeah.
Because on one hand, we want magic to come back. On the other hand, imagine people with magic who have bad intentions.
Inan wants a better Orisha, but he wants to rid himself from the tyranny of his father. Like, he doesn't want anything to happen. He really just wants peace.
He really wants peace, but he also sees his father's side of things. These people will destroy us, but he sees Zaylee's side of things.
Yeah, but then he sees the worst side of his father at one point in the book, and he's like, he can't.
So he went back and forth, like.
But, and it's really interesting to see that, like, you know, when you're attached to somebody, like. So Inan is attached to, he becomes attached to people quickly because of his power.
Yeah.
Like, so he's like, so he will see that he can't detach himself from somebody being tortured or somebody being killed or someone.
He feels that pain.
He feels that. And there are some scenes in there that I get a bit raunchy.
The dreamscape is like a little dungeon.
At first he uses the dreamscape as a place to fight. And he's like, I'm going to come and kill you now. And then it becomes a place where he's just down in the waterfall and doing all kind of, not anyway. But
I'm like, if it's in the dreamscape, did it happen? Like, can you imagine that? You wake up and you're just...
But you know, it gets a bit freaky.
Yeah, it gets a little hot and, you know, heavy. But I love the fact that obviously there is a sort of a forbidden type of romance in there.
Yeah,
and
it's Romeo and Juliet-esque.
Very much so. And and you're like, I really love you, but at the same time, I'm having a conflict with this idea of magic for Orisha. Is it actually good? And I think that discussion is a very mature discussion for a children's book, actually. For a young adult fiction.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, this is very mature. We're getting very philosophical.
But we're adults reading it, though. Remember, like, if we were reading this at, 11, 12, we're reading it like,
But it's a seed that gets planted, which I think is great for children, because then they are able to look at something on a different side of the coin.
Later on.
But even at that time, it plants a seed of, oh, this good thing can be looked at as being bad.
Yeah.
And it is also very plausible.
Yeah.
So how do we balance that? And how do we come to a middle point where we can compromise in a way? And I think that is like, obviously, Zaylee's on this side, Inan is on this side. They love each other, but they have very different ideologies of magic and magic for Orisha. So how do you combine that, like, together?
In a real world sense, it's different ideologies of freedom. What does freedom mean for one person?
Freedom mean?
So it's like, it's like even, you know, the film The Butler. Do you remember The Butler?
Yeah.
So then, you know, he has this son, and he's like, this son's like, I want freedom through the civil rights movement.
Violence and force.
Freedom through peace and all these different things.
Yeah, I want freedom.
And it
becomes,
what does freedom look like? Yeah. And it's put all into this book.
It's amazing.
But if you look at Amari, and Amari is Inan's sister.
Yeah.
And
she's always been afraid of her father.
Her character development was fantastic. And you know, and it's amazing when you see a writer take somebody on a journey, like literally they've come from this shrinking flower to this flourishing thing.
Luminous, not violent, but queen.
Like, it's something that will defend herself and has values and has a strength and a power that she can say.
Inan was always afraid of her father. Amari watched her best friend be killed by her father, almost afraid of her brother because, you know, her father made
them fight
and Inan, and she couldn't fight because she was like, I don't want to hurt him and stuff, and Inan like messed her up and her back was full of scars.
Yes, but yeah.
And she was literally like broken. I don't think she had an understanding of herself. And in this journey with Zaylee, who is this like, listen, I'm out here, I'm finna fight y'all, you know, y'all killed my mother.
And I think there was that comparison. Yeah. So
you're like privileged.
Yeah, you had this privileged person who was shrouded by and made to feel powerless all the time. You had somebody who was not privileged, made to feel powerless, but took power where she could find it.
Yeah.
And then you could like put them together. And obviously, there's friction at the beginning, but they become like really good friends.
It's almost like one person gives to another. So Zaylee becomes more compassionate. She becomes more understanding. She becomes more subdued, but in a way that is still uplifting.
Yeah.
Whereas Amari takes on the strength and she becomes this queen. And then she literally says, you know what? I'm going to be the queen.
Yeah.
Like,
this is what's going to happen.
This is what's going to happen. Like,
If Anand's not there,
what do you mean?
I'm doing it anyway. Yeah, this is what I'm doing.
I'm gonna be the future queen of Orisha, and that's it.
Like, and like the real strong like black female role models within this book is like really intriguing because, you know, even at the very beginning, obviously Zaylee was there. She was always fiery. She was always like that person, and then she was with it. She was Mama Agba's camp, and she was fighting another girl.
Oh, yeah.
Who was just, I forgot what her name is now, but she was really like...
Bad bitch.
Really bad. Like, she was... I don't think she was evil. Cause I thought we were going to see...
I
thought we were going to see more of her in the book, but we didn't. But I think
she was just like, listen, you can't mess with me.
Hopefully she's in the next book.
Yeah.
But like, we're going to see... Hopefully we'll see more of her. But she was like, you know, she was fighting and she was like... They had to learn how to use the staff through combat. And that's something that... diviners and magi like know to do. It's just a cultural thing,
and something you get like you've won this fight, you get your like staff.
You get your staff and whatnot, and it's like Mama Agba was like really decided that she wanted to pull all these young diviners,
black women,
I mean, they were all women, weren't they?
Yeah, I think they were all women. Yeah,
and put them all together and just say
fight,
like learn to defend yourself.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's that kind of unsaid thing where the men will defend themselves, whatever, or they won't have it as bad. You guys need to know how to fight for yourselves because people will take advantage of you.
Yeah.
Remember, you know, people would the guys the soldiers would come in and rape and
just pillage and
take what they wanted because that's what they were allowed to do.
Yeah.
And when you could fight, you at least had a chance to say this is not what I'm doing. And I just found it really interesting to see Mama Agba just being a bad bee. You know, one of them old black women just in there. I just had a picture of her just these robes and just her head
right off. It reminds me of the Matrix, the Oracle,
but
like a different type of Oracle, listen, I see the future and I'm gonna teach you guys how to fight because something is looming, something is coming, and you need to be prepared.
She might know. I don't think she saw it yet.
Hadn't
seen it for ages, she kind of just had that innate sense and
like something is coming,
and that's like, you know, and it was really good. And you know, seeing all the, and then you had Amari was like a princess and her mom was really a horrible woman,
horrible to her.
And you saw that Amari kind of like grew out of that idea. You had Zaylee, whose mom was the leader of the Reapers, of the Reaper clan, the Iku clan, and she had her. And then you had later on in the story we see various other characters in certain camps who are just leading.
There is a young girl. Her name is Zuleika. Who
is Zuleika? Yeah,
Zuleika. Yeah, Arabic name.
Zuleika. Yeah.
Yeah, and she is a healer, and she is a leader of a small clan in like the woods of diviners, and Tommy mirrored her on the young black girl in South Africa. Her name is Zuleika, who was fighting against the school system that told her that she couldn't wear her hair out in an afro. Remember?
Yes, I remember that. Yeah.
And she's like this iconic young black girl who took matters into her own hand, led a protest in her school to defy this racist and horrific ruling that said you... As a black woman, your afro, your natural hair is unprofessional. And you get that everywhere. How can your natural hair be unprofessional when you have Susie coming into work with her curly hair in bits?
Her natural hair
that she hasn't brushed in like 2 days.
This is it.
Susan, why is your hair not unprofessional? But my fro that I have been combing and patterning up.
Moisturizing and putting in protective styles.
Right?
For you to come and tell me that
tell me
not
that this
natural.
Is unprofessional and unnatural.
And Zuleika was described. She was small, but she was strong. Her hair was out. She was forceful. She was erudite.
She was a healer. She was out here like.
Doing what she had to do.
Yeah, she was healing people. And even just gets me so damn emotional talking about this book because. It's a YA novel, but it is
an important novel. It's a very
and I always say that, oh, it's the Harry Potter that I should have read, but really
I want
to redact all of that because at the end of the day I don't even want to put it next to Harry Potter because this is a different story and it's a story that should stand on its own pedestal because I know damn well my child is not reading Harry Potter because Harry Potter will not be the basis for their idea of YA or their idea of young adult fiction, their idea of... Because what young adult fiction teaches you morality. It teaches you... It's like you grow up and roll down and then you move on to YA. It's like a guiding force of learning.
Of your journey through literature.
Exactly, your journey through life. It teaches you so much. So you're there starting from... Rolled out, you're there in the beginning, you're doing like all of these myths and legends that teach you all of these valuable skills, and then you move on to YA, which are important formative years.
Definitely.
You learn friendship from Harry Potter and bravery and courage,
and morality and all these different things,
and good and bad and evil and how they come together. But in this, you learn that as well, but you learn that through people who look like you, and you're like, this is me,
this is what I'm doing, this is where I'm at. With everything, like you can look at it and think, I could be that person.
Yeah.
And I was saying to my friend the other day, like, this is the one series that I feel that I could cosplay for.
Mm.
Like, I feel like I could go out there and cosplay. Okay, Black Panther came out in February, and yeah, you can cosplay for Black Panther, and that's great. But at the same time, I feel like I could literally dye my hair silver.
Right?
And, okay. No, like not like Cisco back in the day, whatever. But I could dye my hair silver.
And you don't need to wear anything
silver.
Else.
I could just and wear like I mean, figure that out as I go, whatever. But I could do it because I feel like I could say this is I'm Inan from Children of Blood and Bone, or I'm from this clan.
Or you need one little hair strip at the front with a helmet,
a strip
of white hair,
and that's it,
and a helmet,
and that's the thing. Because and you feel like you can be a part of a community now because. Yeah. Like Tommy has created this world that we can step into and fully see ourselves in, and it's just it's a really important and a really interesting place to be in.
Initially I'm a bit judgmental of YA because sometimes I'm like, this is really crap writing. Alex has just fainted. But I say this because I get really apprehensive because I'm like, is it YA because it's pertinent to young adult lives, teenagers, like, you know, starting out? Or, and in that sense, does it need to lack literariness?
No, that's the thing. As long as the message gets to where it needs to get.
I think I personally have needed to debunk this idea that YA is subpar and inferior to literary fiction for adults. Do you know what I mean? And I think there, you know, when you go into schools and you ask kids, oh, what are you reading? It's like, well, I'm reading The Canterbury Tales. I'm reading Jane Eyre. And then someone said, well, you know, like young adults. Like I read Jane Eyre as a young adult. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
And I read classics as a young person. And in class, there is already that ingrained snobbiness of books. Like, oh, if you're reading Pride and Prejudice at 17 or 16...
You're intelligent. You can grasp certain aspects.
Yeah, like superior thought and 19th century living.
Screw all of that.
Exactly. But if you're reading Children of Blood and Bone at that age, then you're okay, fine, you know. But in a classroom, and that's the thing that needs to be debunked.
And I feel like that will change because of the way that we connect and the way that we, as a generation nowadays, tend to engage with creators and people that create things. So if we go back to when J.K. Rowling was putting out Harry Potter, or Jenny Nimmo did the Charlie Bone series or whatever, they were of a different generation of writers, you know. So basically a lot of these writers published and produced between 91 and 2008 or whatever. Now we've got, and you know, social media wasn't as big, you know, people were like, there was no access there for me anyway. I felt like reading Harry Potter and whatnot, I wanted to get my book signed, I wanted to go and get it, but I didn't know how to do it. I wasn't really clued up on the internet to be like, let me go find where J.K. Rowling's signing, I'm going to go and get my book signed and stuff. But yeah, all these people, all these typically white people, were in the queue to get their book signed and whatnot.
Different. They were a part of the community.
Now we've got loads of access to different social medias. We know where, say, Tommy is at any given time. Yeah. We can find out.
We know her next event. Yeah.
We know her next event. Email, write letters, all these different things. We can, when we, they could do that before, but when you just don't have the knowledge and you don't have the wherewithal, essentially, for me anyway.
And we have young black people in the creative spaces that can bring other people up.
And that's,
my little cousin loves this book. You don't understand how she forced me.
I gave it to my cousin, like, because she's been reading this.
Yeah, she's been reading this, and she has been beside herself. Like, when I got to see Tommy, she made me do a video, and she's like, when's her next event? And so she's like, she has access to this, which I think, I don't even think I could have access to J.K. Rowling, but I have access to Tommy. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, my little cousin, in a way, has access to Tommy. She can tweet her.
Yeah.
And I know damn well she has tweeted her picture to her and Tommy has replied. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so it's this community that is built.
Building.
And you feel like you are part of Arisha. You are part of that world that is very different. Like, I love Hogwarts. And we are children of the Harry Potter generation, in a way. And we like, some of us were waiting for that letter. But me, I'm waiting for my stuff now.
I'm waiting for my...
My hair to turn white, you know?
At what point?
Exactly. Like, when is it going to happen?
Ain't no letter. Ain't nobody saying no right now.
Ain't no damn owl coming. Keep your wand. Keep your owl.
Give me
my stupid white hair.
My connector situation for whichever clan I need to be in.
I need to know which clan I'm in.
I need to be for my ME clan.
Thank you.
And I need to get my hair...
Get
Right? grayed up, which
Thank
I'll probably
you.
Do for carnival, because that's what I'm going to do, and it matches the outfit and the costume. But I think that's the thing, like, you need to actually make it,
it's
the empowerment, and it's strong. And there's one thing I really wanted to speak about very, very quickly, because I know that obviously time and whatnot, but when they went to the Centauros,
my favorite,
and
part,
they found Lekan, the last Centauro, and there was that bit, and I'm and it was like, and he said his name was Lekan, and then Zaylee was like, Olami Lekan. I forgot what the meaning of it is, but I'll find it. And he was like, you know your language.
Right?
You remember yourself, kind of thing.
Yeah. Because it was beautiful.
Because the Centauros are the kind of the keepers of the bridge. They bridge the gap between the gods and the Magi. And they kind of sit in that space where the Magi go to.
There is that communication. Because you need a Centauro to kind of to communicate with that the gods and stuff in a certain way.
Yeah, he said, "Oh, Olami Lekan," and it's my wealth is, and she's like, "My wealth has increased."
Can you imagine?
And she's like, and he's like, "You remember your language.
You know.
Remember your ancestral kind of. You remember yourself.
You know who you are.
Do you know what I mean? Like, you know."
Yeah.
And that's when I was just like,
you just have to sit back and like.
I remember reading it on the train. I think we're going to the Waterstones our show.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow. Who am I? I left my umbrella on the train.
This has been taken away. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like this is.
And I just look at all, like, so for example, especially with the black African American community. I mean, as my, like, I'm from Zanzibar. Like, I know my language. I know my people in a way.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm looking at, like, the African American identity. And when I went to New Orleans and I saw all of these black people. Which, these black people look like me. There is nothing. I'm looking at their faces. And these people are African.
Yeah.
These are African people. And they have been taken from their lands. Language stripped away from them. History stripped away from them. Ancestors, religion, ideology, community. And they had been implanted in a place that they did not want. And they had to find a way to survive, and they had to find a way to make themselves belong, and they had to form a community, a new culture, a new language, and not and try to integrate, but then they couldn't even integrate because the people that they didn't want them to integrate, so they had to form pockets of community where they can feel wanted. And it is as much as it's what they've done is beautiful. When I went there, you could tell that there's a vacuum. Mm. There's something that is missing. There's a knowledge that is missing. And when Lekan said, like, you know, like, you remember, it's that remembrance that I think was taken from the African-American community.
Because
imagine if they had that knowledge, that even if they chose to stay in the States, because that's their home, do you know what I mean? They
and even like Black Britain, and that's very different,
right?
Just various different things, and it's like it shook me up because I was like, wow, like imagine when I die,
colonialism for dead,
and I go to God, right? And God is like, you remember who you are, and I'm just like,
wait.
But that's the thing, it's crazy because when I drop, because that's just applicable to every person. Regardless, I mean, obviously the African diaspora
is who they is. Yeah,
Europeans,
but anyway,
various people, once you remember and are tapped into where you've come from, everything before you kind of makes it directs where you're going, kind of thing.
And it gives you really interesting sense of self. Like, even now for me, it's very important for me, like, if I have children, those children know about Zanzibar. Those children know about where their mother is from. Those children know their language and their culture and what is important to them. Even regardless how far away I am removed from my family, it is vital for me, for my children, to not lose that. And many times I see young Black British people who are many generations in, and that is lost because they were forced to integrate, because they were told, you have to integrate and forget about your past because that is not what we want here. And that is, it's a gift that is being robbed. And that passion, I feel, is why I'm always like, yo, teach your children your language.
My wealth has increased.
My wealth has increased. Just by the mere fact of knowing who you are,
no,
my wealth has increased.
Like, it doesn't even have to be about money. It's about your worth.
It's inside.
When I read that, it shook me. Right? I was like, ooh, what?
It's inside.
What?
It's like the
scene in Black Panther oh my God, what's his name? You know Daniel Kaluuya's character?
Yeah.
Yeah, but like, and he's like, they put their shield up.
Yeah.
Put their shield up against the thing. That sent shivers down my thing because of...
Just the cloak, you know.
Just a cloak. Literally, the cloak kind of created the barrier.
Was that, like, boom, this is me.
And it's like, this is our culture. Yeah. This is our ancestral identity. This is us. This is our spirits. You cannot come in. And that's kind of what it was. And that's the importance of the book.
My wealth has increased.
My wealth has increased. I've written an essay on names and breaking down all these names and looking at them, I'm just thinking, this is just amazing. The power within a name is miraculous. Like, you can't just whimsically give somebody a name. You actually have to sit down and think about it, and you can craft them as you wish, but...
It reminds me of Afua Hirsch in British, when she talks about the process of naming her child, actually, and what she wanted to show her child, but also the world about... that's why she chose to give her daughter a Ghanaian name, and what that means to have a Ghanaian name living in Britain now.
This is it.
And being amongst... Like, when that girl goes to job interviews, her name has history. Her name has an explanation. You know, she's not just, you know, Jenny from the block.
I even had this thing where, you know, like... They were like... I don't want to give too much away about what I've written, but they had several people. I was going to work, and there were like six Alexes.
Can you imagine?
My name is a strong... I've actually had to come to terms with the fact that my name is a strong... and powerful name, and the people that gave me that name were strong and powerful people, and I have to understand that my name can't just be among like just these people who don't.
I was wondering, like,
it.
What would you like? Imagine all of this didn't happen because your existence was written on this earth, regardless of the history, regardless of the colonial enterprise. Your life was meant for this earth, and if those histories didn't happen, you would have existed.
Yeah.
and it's the life that you would have had. And I'm like, what would your name have been?
I don't know.
It would not have been Alexander.
No, it wouldn't have been Alexander, but if it had...
But it would have been something.
It would have been something, and it would have meant something, and
yeah,
it would have...
And it's that.
And it would have been carried down, depending on where I was placed or where I was from or whatever, like, you know? And it's really interesting to think about, but we can't dwell so much on what would have happened then. We've got to look at where we are now and these different things. Guys, that is Children of Blood and Bone.
Honestly, we could go on.
We can go
forever
on this topic.
But you
let
guys
us
need
know,
to read it. But most importantly, give this book to your young ones.
Let us know what you think. Because I think, as I tweeted out before I deactivated, I tweeted out, like, who's read Children of Blood and Bone? What tribes are you from? I felt like people weren't talking about the book enough.
Yeah.
I feel like everybody can talk about Gryffindor, Slytherin, da 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 da.
But we want to know what
we can all do that. We can all banter about it. But I want to know what tribe you are in. I want to know what clan you're from. I want to know why. I want to know, like, why have you placed yourself there? I mean, if you go to the childrenofbloodandbone.com, I think the website is.
There's a test Tommy actually done herself.
Yeah, she done it. She found out she was a Reaper.
Yeah.
And but she's done this test, and obviously she based it on various elements of Pottermore, of the Slytherin thing, the house finder. But then if you look on it and you do it, like, find out what tribe you're in. It's just
it's a fun thing.
Obviously these things.
Because as much as we are children of the Gryffindor generation, I want
the Gryffindor generation,
the Harry Potter generation.
There we go. Okay.
I want my children but my young ones to be the generation of Children,
like,
of Blood and
yeah,
Bone.
Man,
do you know what I mean?
Connector.
Can you imagine?
And I'll be like, yes, yeah, you know, because the thing
do
is,
I mean?
It's, like, it's a bonding thing as well.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you're a connector. I get that.
Yeah, I get it.
I'm a burner. But it's a thing, you know. But I mean, obviously,
and we need to
it's
use,
a culty thing.
Yeah,
but
like,
it is what it is.
But we need to stop. I mean, I love Harry Potter. I love Hunger Games. I love Chaos Walking Trilogy. Like, I love all that stuff.
Mm.
But that stuff is not me. This becomes you. Yeah, like, you have to just put it on you and say, yeah, I will adopt this. I will assimilate. But with this, you don't even need to think, can I assimilate to this? Mm. You're just in it. This is who you are. And so the one thing that I would say is, even if you don't want to read this book, I really urge at least one of you to, like, if you're like listening, buy this book and
definitely
give
it
to a black child in your family and tell that person to read it. Because I honestly believe, like, when I gave it to my little cousin, she's wildly obsessed.
Give it to a black child, give it to a white child, make sure that
obviously the
black children, there's a reason and there's a difference that they will take from it.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
But the white children need to learn empathy and they need to learn. They need to learn that there are other people. They need to learn how we feel when we read Harry Potter.
Yeah, there's several topics in there, you know. Tommy does an afterword at the end about why the book came together, and she utilizes the Black Lives Matter movement, the police, the deaths in police custody, the black deaths on the street, and she puts it all into her letter, and it's a very emotive one. And I think it's very important that we understand where these things come from, and it's a very important pivotal book, so we can leave it there.
That was a lot.
Mercy flicks.
All right, so we're gonna keep this short and sweet, but we watched About Time.
God, yeah, About Time. That's such an English film.
I loved it. Okay, should we explain what it's about?
About Time is about a guy who's each male member in his family, by the time they reach 21, they can travel back in time to things that they had experienced, and only things that they've experienced themselves. And the main character,
his name's Tim Lake.
Played by Domhnall Gleeson. Yeah, he's Bill Weasley in Harry Potter, and he's the son of Mad-Eye Moody real life. Anyway, so he was in it, and basically they decided
they can't really change history,
but
they can improve their
lives. Go back in time and they can improve their lives and stuff. And it's a very interesting conversation about what could you change if you could?
Yeah.
And what would you change if you couldn't?
So obviously, he like...
When he first got his power, he went back in time for New Year's Eve and he did the kiss that he that he missed out on.
Yeah.
Or
to make another girl feel happy.
To make another girl feel happier. Yeah. Or he went back in time to be more cool about the situation, about Margot Robbie's character.
Yeah, and then the lesson that he learned in that was you can't make someone fall in love with you even if you change who you are. Because he goes back several times for Margot Robbie's character. The first time, she was like, oh, you should have told me this at the beginning. Maybe it would have been something. He goes back.
To the beginning.
To the beginning.
And she's like, oh, come back at the end.
Maybe you should come back at the end. You should have told me this at the end. And then he's like, what?
You're a liar.
Yeah.
You're trash.
So, yeah, like, you can't really change yourself. But then he meets Rachel McAdams' character at a bar where you can't see people.
It's a restaurant. Yeah, you can't see people, but you're sat next to somebody.
You're sat with them and you can't see them. And then it was just beautiful.
It's really Notting Hill-esque. It's a very British film. It's a very English film, but it's very I wouldn't say relatable, but I would say.
What would you change? Like, if you could go back in time, what would be the one moment? I know this is very personal and intrusive, but I'm going to ask you anyway because we are a personal and intrusive podcast. If you could go back in time, I'm not going to go that far back. I know, but to a point in your life, what would you have changed?
Let me think about
that. And you have to be very honest.
Thank you.
Okay.
If I went back in time, what would I change? I think I've thought about this recently. And I thought about, like, if I went back, I would go back to my GCSE results mm-hmm. and alter what I picked for A-level. And then alter what I picked for degree. But then I thought about that and I was thinking, if I did that, I wouldn't be where I am now. Because it's interesting to see what path it would have taken to if I was to get back to this point.
Yeah.
But I think that that's probably what I would do. I'd probably change my A-level subjects. It's a really geeky thing to change. But I basically went into my A-levels without knowing exactly what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of did a myriad of things that just weren't good. They were just really rubbish choices. And I just felt like I probably would have gone back and altered those choices and then solidified what I wanted to do, then solidified what I wanted to do at uni, and then, you know, that's probably what I would have done. And I probably would have just, if I could go back, I probably would just go back to times where that I just enjoyed a lot more. Like, I probably would have gone back to Jamaica, like gone back to a point when I was in Jamaica and I just embraced a bit more of a moment or whatever, or gone back to a time where it's a family occasion and just embraced a bit of a moment again. Or I've had a lot of thoughts about year 9 or year 10 or whatnot, and I've thought about like what it was like at school, and I can kind of be transported back there, just to feel that feeling. But I'm here. I'm like
but
10 years old.
You know
what?
It was very important because remember near the end of the story of the film when obviously his father passes away, and the advice that his father gives him is go back and make sure you live every day twice. The first time, live it how you'd normally live it. And the second time, go back and recognize the beautiful things that you didn't see
at the time.
In the first time. And it was like, and then you would understand that life is worth living. So he went back and used to do days twice. And it was beautiful because in points of strife and boring times, and he was able to see things that, even like when he goes to like Starbucks and he sees the waiter, and the waitress is like, oh, like, how's your day? She's very bubbly. And the first time, he's just like, yeah, whatever. Like, how we always ask, like, yeah. And the second time, he talks to her, he smiles, he makes her day a little bit better. And in doing so, makes his day a bit better. And it's just that understanding that there is always goodness to be found in every situation. But I would actually go back to a romantic setting.
Oh, God, of course you would.
I would go back to sixth form when... my crush at the time, Jesse Manful. I even remember his name. If you're listening, like, I'm so sorry. It was his birthday and I was such a goody two shoes and I really, really liked him. And he was like, oh, what are you doing after school? We should hang out.
None of your business. I'm going to Pray.
I was so shook.
Leave me alone.
I was like, oh my God, are you asking me out? And obviously I was such a good little Muslim girl that I made the right decision. I said, I'm so sorry, I can't come. Yeah. I'm babysitting, which was what my excuse to all the boys were, because I was a good Muslim girl.
It was your default.
Yeah, like default. I'm babysitting. And I didn't go. And yeah, like, he just was my crush, but nothing, you know, happened or whatever. And that is what my parents would have wanted me to do.
Yeah.
And I look back now and I'm like, I didn't break any rules as a kid.
You didn't.
Because I was such a good girl. And a part of me would have just wanted to live a little. And I'm like, I really want to go back to that moment to be like, you know what? Yeah. I don't care if I go home late and get in trouble for this one day, because it's just one day in the days of my whole life, you know. And I wouldn't have minded going back to be like, you know what? Yeah, let's hang out, Jesse. So,
you know, and I think back on so many times, and I'm just like, this is actually so funny, just because I was still my judgmental self at 15. But I remember like being in house parties and being like, what's going on here? What's happening here?
I was hella stush.
It's actually so funny because I look back on it and I'm like, you know, if I could go back just to those points, I just probably embrace it a lot more, because there's nothing really, because at those ages, you really think that life is...
This is it.
Like, yeah, this is it. This is everything that...
This means so much. You know what
I mean? Like, if somebody embarrasses me now, that's it. My life is over.
That's it. My life is over.
If I do something wrong, this is over, blah, 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 blah.
If I break rules, then my family will hate me.
But did you die? We are still here. We are still embracing.
You cannot come and kill yourself. All my young people listening... I don't want to tell you to break rules, but I want to tell you to live your life. Obviously, make sure that you are protected. Make sure you have the love of your family. Make sure that whatever decision that you make
is yours.
And you, in that moment, are very happy about that decision. Make sure that you think about your future, but don't live for the future.
Yeah.
Because the future is not promised.
You don't live for when I am now. Yeah, I am now.
This is what I'm doing here. Yeah.
And I remember like a lot of the times I was like, oh, when I'm this age, I'm going to do this. When I'm that age.
I wished my childhood away. I wished my whole childhood away.
So I looked at my age and I was like, hold on.
Yeah.
Did I do what I was supposed to? Yeah. No, because at the end of the day.
Do not wish your life away.
You think about these things. And I think like as a teenager, you do look at all the TV shows, you look at all the things you've read, you look at all the situations. And you're like, okay, so that can happen when I'm 27.
Yeah.
That's fine. That can happen when I'm 25.
Yeah.
That can happen when I'm 21. When I'm 23, I can do this. Yeah. And you're just like, when you get to 23, you're just very much like, well, I can still do this when I'm 25. Mate, get 25, you're like.
When I was 18, I was like, at 25, I'd be married. I'd be pregnant with my first child. Babes, first of all. Alex is laughing right now. He can't even talk. He's just in the corner laughing. You're an asshole. But it's so funny.
I can't imagine having a child at this point in time.
5-year plan. I was going to find someone second year of university. I was going to get married in 2017. That was last year, guys. And at this age, you'd have been 1 year, and I've just been pregnant with my first child. Where is that? But however, I can honestly
say, where is my young child?
But what I can honestly say is, obviously my life has taken me on a different like way. But I'm embracing that I am now. I'm here. I'm present. And I need to do now.
Mm-hmm.
What tomorrow is not promised, I can plan for the future, but I must live for the present.
Yep.
And so, do not wish your childhood away. Don't wait. Do it now.
Yeah.
Like there is, if you're waiting for the perfect time is always now.
Yeah. And like, just deal with the consequences thereafter and the results thereafter, because anybody got time to be thinking about what I'm going to be doing in 10 years? 10 years time, you're gonna be looking at where you are at and you're gonna be thinking, no, that was some bullshit.
Yeah,
I needed to actually have just done this.
Live your life and be free.
In the moment and do your thing.
Yeah.
And
obviously like as a Slytherin, always plan ahead, I mean
that's it.
Always step on these people's necks because you can't just be doing, I just want to live for the now. Obviously, step on people's necks for the future.
Understand sense, you know what I mean? You can't come out here and be doing nonsense and just be thinking that. I remember there were some people in my year, I'm not even going to go into who they were or what they did, but they were doing some foolishness.
Yeah. Facial books.
And I was like, really?
Do some
and
then sport.
I see them on Monday in maths and I'd be like, but really? Is this you? Trying to do Pythagoras, but you can't even walk up the stairs.
You're rude. You're so rude. Anyways, guys, my issue for this week is I know it's summer and this is very not bookish of me, but I need you guys on the people who get on the central line to wear deodorant in this heat. I am very tired.
It's imperative, to be honest.
Because the central line is my imagination of hell. When I think of the pits of hell, I think being on the central line in the dead of summer, like hella hot, you can't even breathe. And like, it's just disgusting. It's like death walk. Like,
I'm actually finished.
It's horrible. So please, 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 guys, this is going to be really short and sweet for me. Shower for you, for you certain demographics.
Antibacterial
soap. Like, to shower
cream
too. All right, you know I don't want to see your dirty crusty ass dry skin up in my face. I
want some good fragrances,
so please, like, you know. And I wear oud in the summer. Someone's like, oh, you can't be wearing that.
Why are you even on the central line? I think, guys, find a way around it
so that other people like us can take it.
Get on the Santander bikes. Be in nature. Be in fresh air. It's
£2. Some of us don't live in West London, so we can just be strolling into recording. Some of us has to come all the way from East London to come to this hell of a place.
About.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
So
I don't know who he's talking about. I don't live anywhere. I don't exist.
And also, I read an article about black women not being paid enough for their salaries.
Yeah, that's tough.
I beg you guys, like, what are you doing? Black women have been supporting and holding down your social infrastructures.
So many organizations.
So, like, we've been doing
so
the work.
So many initiatives.
We've been putting down
Pay
work.
Black women their money, man.
Pay us our money. Pay us what we're worth. Pay us for our time and our effort. And also, black women do not be doing anything, especially black women in the creative industries. If they're not paying enough, say no. Another opportunity will come and you will be able to take it and you will flourish. My wealth has increased.
Your bills will be paid. Don't worry.
Your bills will be paid.
If it doesn't align with your integrity, don't take it.
Don't take it.
Okay.
Pay us what you owe. Shout out Rihanna. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for listening to this week's Mercy Lit, guys.
Check us out on mercylit.com.
You will find all the information about Cheltenham Literary Festival.
Absolutely.
London Podcast Festival.
Yes, we're doing London Podcast Festival in September. Please get there.
Find out all the information that's on the website there. Check us out at Mercy Lit Twitter, Mercy Lit Pod on Instagram. We're out here.
Please comment, subscribe.
We loved your comments last week. Yeah, like, please just keep bringing them because we see them. And
especially for the guy who messaged us all the way from Australia.
Yeah, if we can fit them in to the show.
We will.
And it's amazing. But yeah, Ray said Ramona Ravenclaw last week.
Apparently, I did.
Because I listened to it this morning.
Did I actually say Ramona?
I was like, you're like, Ramona Ravenclaw. Like, you said it clearly.
I think maybe because I was feeling very ghetto and I was like, what's ghetto?
Ramona.
It's Rowena.
No, but Rowena Ravenclaw is Ravenclaw.
Yeah.
But Ramona was in book six, but I forgot what her surname was.
Oh, and shut up. I didn't think about that.
She made that that love potion for Harry, but then Ron took it, innit?
Hermione took it and then she smelled.
No. Ron ate the chocolates and he took the love potion and he was like.
Which book? Oh, I'm thinking about six, book six. When they were in the potions and they were talking about love potions.
Six. So same book.
Was it that one?
Same book, yeah.
And then Hermione was like, oh, I smell toothpaste.
Hermione was like, oh, I smell fresh basically, cut grass and toothpaste.
Yeah, basically Ron.
She's so dead.
Well, no. But she was spelling Ron. Do you know what I mean?
Anyway, guys, see you next week.
Bye. Okay, lit.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.